Welcome to the podcast of tomorrow, a Futurama podcast where today we are discussing season 4, episode 12, where no fan has gone before. I am Lindsay Wilson, joined as always by Alex Koontz. Alex, how's it going?
I am great. Live long and prosper, where no pod has gone before. What else is there?
Fascinating, Alex, and logical too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that was my favorite line, I think.
Yeah. So I came out of this episode with a thesis on what Futurama is. And I might have done this exact thesis before because I remember talking about community, but I think Futurama is just community.
Interesting. I don't think you've said this before.
I've always said Parks and Rec is live action Simpsons. And I really think Futurama is live action community because it's all like you could imagine this episode as a community episode where it's like it is all just references to something else. It is like there are established characters, but there's like no real character development. Even the thing that I always complain about community is that they, and I haven't seen all of it to be fair, but like they do this weird thing where they try to have some progression of relationships through the show of like, oh, whatever, these two are together now, or these two have a history. But so many of the episodes are in like complete like wackadoo fantasy world
concept
that it's like very
episodes.
very hard to actually maintain character relationships. And I feel like Futurama is the exact same way, where it's like, okay, Fry and Leela like are slowly making a relationship together, but then there are like so many episodes where like nothing matters, everything is just crazy fantasy episodes, and then they do a lot of like weird genre stuff like this episode.
That's a very good thesis. I don't think you've ever said that before, but I really like it. I think it's absolutely right. This one, I was thinking the same thing as I was watching through it. I was like, this is just like one bit after another, one reference, reference, reference.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's like intended to be, but just like all of the jokes are so Star Trek-y.
Right.
But
Which
I feel
again
like
is,
they land.
Yeah, it's totally fine. And like, you know, I think this would work for any, like, you know, Futurama is just like in such a weird place that I can do this for any reference or any show. And like Star Trek is obviously one that fits well because it's a sci-fi thing, but like I don't think it would be insanely weird for Futurama to do, I don't know, what's a Seinfeld episode. That would be pretty weird, but
fair.
But it wouldn't be like as bizarre as, you know, as Friends doing a Seinfeld episode or something like that.
Yeah, fair. I think it's a good comparison because I feel like I can so easily imagine, I guess I'm thinking specifically about like the community, you said you didn't watch it all, but the community episode where they're like doing the space mission, or like even the one where they're doing D&D, where it's like, you know, you get so deep into these nerd things that it's very
All the
easy to
paintball
imagine.
is just genre stuff. Yeah.
I'm thinking those two specifically, just like about space or nerd shit, but like I think it's like incredibly easy to imagine just like specifically just like porting in the community characters to this episode.
Right.
Yeah. So all right, well, what'd you think overall? You liked it?
Yeah, I think I liked it. I have like moderate Star Trek knowledge, so I think I probably have like enough Star Trek knowledge to understand most of the jokes here and like kind of anticipate most of the jokes here. Like as they're getting towards the end of it and having the big battle scene, I'm like, oh, okay, they're like just doing this so they can play the Star Trek fight music. And Kirk's like very hammy ripped shirt and his fighting style and all that. It's just like, okay, we're just like getting to the point so we can do this kind of stuff.
I think last week you said you had seen like the best of Next Generation, and you've seen some of the original stuff also.
I really have not seen a ton of the original stuff. I don't know if I've seen a full episode. Maybe the Tribbles episode.
Yes, fair. Yeah, and I mentioned my dad was really into the original show, so I've seen like odds and ends, like enough of it to know the references here anyway.
Yeah. Lindsay, we breezed through our weeks. How was your week?
My week was fine. I was thinking of you actually as I was driving home today because I was making precious memories with my various nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's that thing Alex does sometimes.
Are you the most
time
beloved?
With his family. Certainly not.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah. No, I was gone for such a long time that they're all just like, who's this? Why is she back and looking for a relationship with me?
In thinking about my nephew, I mean, I guess I'm his only uncle on this side of the family. I guess he has lots of uncles and aunts on the other side of the family. But I was thinking about how when I was a child, you know, some uncles, I just liked some uncles or aunts more than other uncles and aunts. And for like no reason other than vibes, I guess. Like, oh, yeah.
Just based on vibes. Yeah.
And so I was thinking about that of where do I rank in this kid's little power rankings?
Yeah, I was like extremely absent, and now I'm just like the one who talks to them like an adult and is never any fun.
Yeah, it's good.
Hazel sent me a clip one time from Arthur, the cartoon, where it was like, and it was like on TikTok, where it was like meeting your childless aunt or whatever, and she's like petting him from afar and like, you can give me a hug, but only after you go wash your hands.
Yeah, perfect.
So pretty accurate. How about you? How was your week?
It was fine. We were getting ready to go to Quebec City tomorrow.
Yes.
So any French Canadian listeners want to write in the next? Well, it's too late. I suppose we'll still be there when
yes,
this
if you're listening to it
plays.
The day it comes out, go find Alex in Quebec City.
Yeah, go find me. This is like the Dr. Manhattan, every human is a miracle analogy that I had when the butcher wrote in. I'm like, what are the odds of a butcher writing into this podcast? It's the same thing with if anyone is in Quebec City. Listening the day it comes out. I suppose reach out and we can meet up.
There you go. Perfect. Yes. The capital of Quebec, not Montreal, as many people think.
I mean, it's in the name.
Indeed.
The city
yes,
of
Quebec,
Quebec
City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I wanted to call out was the Conan Hot Ones, which yes. Conan, one of our favorite writers of The Simpsons. And yeah, just I told you to give it a watch, and you had the exact same response that I had of big Jeremy energy.
Big Jeremy energy. Yes, I am a weekly listener to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. So it was on my list for the week anyway. And I was very surprised you were the first one to message and be like, I've watched it. It was great.
Yeah.
And yes, it was. It was very, very good.
It made me think of like not to toot Jeremy's own horn, because I'm sure he is listening. And so to just like give a random listener compliments. But it made me think of like what a talent Jeremy is, where it's like the Conan Hot Ones, everyone agrees is like one of the best hot ones of all time. Conan is like one of the, you know, our generation's great entertainers. And like you truly see the resemblance to Jeremy. And it's quite impressive.
So. Quite impressive. Yes, I agree. And like instantly it was just like, yes, I see like Jeremy, just like so much of this frenetic Conan mania.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So shout out to Jeremy for your Conan
energy. Keep coming on our podcast for 15 minutes at a time and bring that energy.
Till you get too big for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into this episode and get on with our day. Mm-hmm. The opening caption, where no fan has gone before. First time we've ever seen a caption matching a title, I think.
Yes, I saw on the wiki, it said this happened a couple more times with like the reboots episodes, but very boring. Come on. Come on, Futurama.
Yes. Yeah, try a little harder. Like, surely there's another Futurama pun you could have done.
Mm-hmm. What's your thought on episode titles following a format like the one with or...
Yeah, it's fine. They tried to do it, I noticed, in Arrested Development too, where I think there were like, so it's like pilot, and then I think there are two episodes after that where it's like the one where they build a house, the one where they do whatever, and then after that they stop forever, like it's two episodes and then they just stop. So I wondered if Friends was like cease and desist this behavior. Yeah. I don't know. But
interesting.
I kind of like it. I like when there's a structure that you can depend on, but I can't think of any other shows that do that really.
Scrubs is my blank, like my patient, whatever. And then Seinfeld famously was like, we're just going to have boring episode titles because nobody is ever going to see the episode titles, only to find out that DVDs will exist.
They were often
years.
Ridiculous names. I remember like, when Rob unrelated. And Akiva did it, they were like, what would be a better title for this episode?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I meant to tell you and I forgot. I'm glad that we got onto the subject of old TV. My Crave screen now is like, would you like to continue watching Frasier? Because I was like, I got to find that thing about the ship in a bottle. But in fact, I was mistaken. It wasn't a ship in a bottle. It was just a model ship. And the joke was that Niles was like, so you want to build a 3-masted schooner? And then he breaks one of the masts and is like, so you want to build a 2-masted schooner? And boy, did I like that joke.
Crave screen? Is this just an app that you watch television on?
It's like our version of Max. So it's called Crave and it has like all the HBO stuff. It has a lot of the like Hulu stuff because we don't have Hulu or Max. So a lot of stuff ends up
Craving. This is like a tangent on the tangent. I use a friend's Paramount Plus account to watch Survivor.
Get him.
Right, exactly. Yeah, password sharing. Although I think they don't care. I don't know if they have an official stance.
I think they probably know that like they're not long for this world.
Yeah. I don't know. Paramount Mountain.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm going to briefly interrupt you before you continue. We had Paramount Plus here. We still do, but they had all of Survivor for like 3 months, maybe, and they had all of The Amazing Race, and then they got rid of all of The Amazing Race, and you can now only watch seasons 30 and up on Survivor, so pointless. Canceled my subscription.
Awful. Yeah. I mean, Paramount Plus, home of many and perhaps all Star Trek series and certainly all the new ones. So that's a connection. But now I have two tangents, which is unfortunate. We're getting further and further away. Use Paramount Plus to watch Survivor, and there's a couple of different like profiles on Paramount Plus because a couple of people do this. And for whatever reason, this past week when I was waiting for Survivor to start, I decided, okay, I'm going to go change the profile picture on my account and on my friend Chase's account without his permission. Let me try to find the goofiest profile picture. So I was looking through all of them, and they're all like headshots of people on CBS shows. And I landed on Frasier for his profile picture.
Perfect.
My other tangent is gone. Oh, Amazing Race. I was a single friend. The friend that I swiped on and matched for Seinfeld quotes, I was swiping on her again, and there was an Amazing Race reference, and I liked the person and said, "Will you be the Charlotte to my Myrna?" Which doesn't make any sense, but you know, the real ones will know that this person
way
is fun
back.
Now. Yeah.
That's very funny. So. Apparently it wasn't a love match, huh?
Yeah, apparently not yet. I don't know.
All right, well, that's too bad.
All right, we'll bring it back. Step back.
Oh, I should have said that's a shame. Ugh, damn it, yeah, Lindsay.
That's a shame.
It's fine. All right. Anyway, okay, wow, that was just off of the opening caption. It's the longest intro sequence ever, but opening cartoon, Alex, Boop Corner.
Boop, there it is. This one, it was like a bit hard to tell what was going on. I honestly had to rewind it and take a second look at it. It's like a cat and a dog fighting. A bit hard to see what's happening.
Yeah, so it's a very good description. This is called Hiss and Make Up, which is from 1943. Okay. It is a Looney Tunes cartoon. Helpfully, the Looney Tunes fandom wiki tells us that this is a pun on kiss and make up. So
that is helpful.
Catch that. Yeah. The short version is that an old woman has a cat named Wellington, a dog named Roscoe, and a canary. And the cat and dog, quote, fight even worse than normally. Fed up, she tells them both off and threatens to throw them out if there's any more trouble, despite being told to make amends, too, still wants to continue their mischief.
We need to get in on a new medium and do the most basic shit imaginable, where it's like, oh, nobody has ever made a television show before. Here's one about a cat and a dog fighting. Like, you know, yes. It's just like, so it's just like fertile pasture to do like literally anything if you're the first adopters of a medium.
Honestly, yeah. Then this is like one of the longer and more detailed plot descriptions where there's six examples of things that they do to frame one another to try to get in trouble. And then the canary ultimately has enough of them and frames both of them. So they both get
fired. Wow, twist.
Yeah, plot twist at the end. Okay.
So, well, maybe I'm not giving them enough credit. That is a lot of work.
Yes, a lot of information going on there. Plus, it was a terrible strain on the animator's wrists.
Yeah.
All right. So as I mentioned last week, the details in the Futurama wiki, extremely thorough this week.
Sure. Yeah. I looked myself and I just a lot of Star Trek references.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the episode opens up and Zap Brannigan is holding a court martial with the crew of the Planet Express ship. And it starts off right away. We've got Captain Kirk being like, Shatner's log, the impossible has happened.
Yes.
And yeah, so it's like all the crew from Star Trek combined with the Planet Express crew, and they're being court-martialed by Zap Brannigan.
Something that I didn't look up, which I imagine the answer is yes, are these all the real voice actors for the Star Trek people?
Yes.
Okay. That's very cool.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, it was fun getting to see them all. One thing I don't understand is, so like the first witness to come up is Fry, and he's in this like wheelchair thing and he looks paralyzed. And then we were later going to find out that he is like just doing a face and like,
right,
isn't. And I don't know why.
Yes. So this is, I believe, so this is a reference to Captain Chris Pike of the Enterprise, who is the captain before Kirk. And that, I think that this is probably the pilot of, this was originally introduced, I would guess, in the pilot of the original series, of the captain gets like disabled essentially and is like in this big like black wheelchair type thing. And then Kirk takes over the captain of the Enterprise. But they have since, it is very interesting that this character has become such like a prominent thing. And I mean, I guess it was iconic because Futurama is even doing it way back when, but this character has had like many iterations since then, where the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek movie in 2009 was like a reboot. It was like a reboot of the origin of Kirk, of how Kirk became the captain of the Enterprise. And Chris Pike is like a main character in that movie. So he's not just like, you know, horribly maimed, like immediately, you know, he's like an actual character there. And then the new Paramount plus Star Trek show, Brave New Worlds, which is actually quite good. I watched a couple of episodes of it, and people say it's very true to the original. It follows, like, Chris Pike is, like, the main character, and it's, like, before, you know, it's before Kirk takes over, basically.
Yeah, I'm looking this up, and I just put, like, Chris Pike, Futurama, and it links to someone in a similar chair, Captain Muskie, one of the many former pilots for Planet Express, seems to be the only one who is still alive. He's wheelchair bound and speaks only through beeps and lights. His appearance down to his hair, facial scar, wheelchair, and communication manner resemble Christopher Pike from the television show Star
Trek.
Very
interesting.
And that was from the episode A Clone of My Own, which we watched a really long time ago.
Interesting. I'm looking up on the Star Trek wiki. Yes, this seems to be, it seems like Chris Pike is not injured in the pilot, but the pilot of Star Trek, the original series, has a lot of Pike in it. And then there's an episode, The Menagerie, where Pike is promoted to fleet captain. He is severely injured while rescuing several cadets from a battle, leaving him unable to speak. He's in a chair. One flash meeting yes, two flash meeting no.
Okay, perfect. All right, so clearly that's what this is. I am also now just looking at Captain Pike after the accident. Looks bad. So,
yeah.
All right, well, I'm glad we settled that.
But really, I mean, like, such an interesting, so the character first appeared in 1965, and now there is a show where that character who appeared in two episodes of the original series is the main character. It's like, it is interesting that such a, like, seemingly tiny character has kind of endured over many years and now is, like, a prominent figure in Star Trek.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, and so same thing, one beep for yes, two beeps for no is how we're going to communicate. And so for our purposes, we think that's the only way that Freya is able to speak. But basically, we find out that they are under arrest because they went to this forbidden planet, Omega 3. And the possible charge is 12 concurrent death sentences.
I like that Zap asks if Fry is guilty and he beeps twice indicating no. And Zap says, beeping twice, double yes, get my gun.
Double yes. So good. Yes. And so the professor was napping a few days ago. And so the crew went to rent movies, which is apparently a thing in the year 3002 yeah. or whatever. And they were like, Fry says, like, you know what? Six movies average out to be pretty good. Yes. Star Trek movies.
Which I don't know if you're aware of this, the Star Trek movie lore is that every even numbered one is good, where 2, 4, and 6 are good, and then 1, 3, and 5 are bad, which is the inverse of Australian Survivor. Of Australian Survivor, all of the even ones are, or no, I guess it's the same thing. All the even ones are good in Australian Survivor.
Well, there you go. So anyway, when he says that, an alarm goes off and everyone just, like, hits the deck immediately. They hear a patrol car coming and they escape. Fry's, like, inside of Bender and they escape because the words Star Trek are forbidden.
Yes. Very sad. Very sad for the Trekkies.
Yes. Yes. Someone on the infosphere or whatever, they were like, oh, Fry says Star Trek back in the pilot. But then some other nerd said, like, no, he got interrupted before he could say it or something. I don't know. Anyway, makes me
think of the taboo on Voldemort's name in Harry Potter 7, which is, like, a very convenient thing, but also, like, they said his name a million times in the other book. I guess the taboo wasn't up. I don't know. That part of part 7 always was a little strange.
Well, I think they say specifically they, like, put it up because they were like, we know that you guys are only gonna be the only ones using the word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really thought it was very funny that Zap is like, ooh, like, I'd like to hear more about these forbidden words from someone with a sexy voice. And then George Takei is like, yes, with pleasure. Also, actually, it's funny that you mentioned the Community thing, because George Takei, I associate very strongly with Community.
Interesting. What does he do in Community? What episodes is he in?
Okay, so let me think about what episode specifically, because mostly what I think about him is that they got him to do this voiceover at the end of one of the episodes where he's like, perhaps if your name is Kevin, I could do your voicemail outgoing message or whatever. And he's like, here, let me do it. And he's like, Kevin can't come to the phone right now or whatever. And he's like, you're welcome, Kevin. George Takei, Community.
The other kind of, like, footnote in George Takei's career, I feel like, is the, I forget what company he did the ads for, but the Oh My ads, where that becomes his, like, catchphrase, which I believe is just from these ads. I don't think Oh My was a Sulu phrase from Star Trek or anything. Right. So that very strange kind of turn of that man's career later on.
But George Takei is in the epidemiology episode, which is arguably my favorite episode of the show. So I should have remembered that.
Sure.
But it's the one where they are having to deal with zombies during the Halloween party and ABBA music is playing over it. Over top of the episode, and it's very good. Yes. And let's see what it says about George Takei. George ends the episode with a voiceover recording a voicemail greeting for someone named Kevin. And yeah, it seems like that's all.
Interesting. Seems like there are some George Takei reveals the origin of Oh My on YouTube, but we'll let the listeners do that as extracurricular work.
Perfect. But yes, he does have a great voice. I will agree with that.
Yeah, I like this sequence of jokes about talking about the Star Trek Wars as opposed to the Star Wars Trek, which was something different.
Yeah, I liked that a lot. They were like, oh yeah, that's the vast migration of Star Wars fans. It's like, no, that's the Star Wars Trek. Yeah, but what happened was that there was an issue in the 23rd century where Star Wars fandom evolved from a loose association of nerds with skin problems. Sorry?
You said Star Wars fandom.
Oh my God. Star Trek fandom evolved from a loose association of nerds with skin problems into its own religion. All power to the engines. Oh, that was good.
Pretty good.
And it got banned because world leaders were threatened by how influential it was. And they ended up just like dumping all of the
sacred
fans
texts
into a volcano. Yeah. And shipping the sacred texts off to Omega 3.
Yeah. One of my favorite Star Wars memes is Luke yelling the sacred texts. Have you seen that one?
No.
It's a still from The Last Jedi when Yoda is burning the tree and all the sacred texts, and it's like a very blurry, low resolution shot of Luke yelling the sacred texts.
The
And
sacred texts.
Yeah.
I did like them calling them the sacred texts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of things that, I don't know, I was trying to transition it into something that people used to like. Anyway, there is a podcast called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. And
oh, yes.
They try to like treat the book as sacred. And I always thought they did a very good job with that.
Speaking of series that people don't really like anymore.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to go for. But then I was like, is there something with like odds and evens? And it got away from me. So thank you for stepping in. But yeah, they were like, oh yeah, the sacred texts were banned along with that blooper reel where the door doesn't close all the way.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that is an actual thing, but I've never seen that one.
Yeah, I haven't either. I initially took the line where they say like, oh, another classic sci-fi show canceled before its time. I was like, oh, very meta. But then I was like, wait, this hasn't been canceled yet.
Yeah. Is this pre-Firefly? It must be.
I think so.
It might be right around Firefly. I don't know.
Yeah, I think of Firefly as being like 2004-ish. Let's make it Firefly. 2002, 2003.
Okay, so, and this is where no fan has gone before is 2002. So
yeah, perfect.
Man, Firefly, 22 years old. That's crazy.
Oh my God, horrifying. Yes. All right, and I thought it was so funny. Also, like a lot of good lines in this. But Zap goes, "This is the most brutal and shocking injustice that I've ever cared so little about."
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then next up, Bender comes to the stand, and that's where we find that the fry is fine. He was just pretending.
Yeah, he just gets out of the wheelchair, and then Bender gets in and starts talking, and they say, please use the beeps.
I only met the defendant Fry once, but I knew he was up to no good. Yeah, but so Fry ran off to the head museum immediately to meet Leonard Nimoy, and he was like, oh my God, I came as soon as I found out what happened centuries ago, and Leonard Nimoy initially is like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I guess this past week we had another Leonard Nimoy reference with the eclipse. What's the line? The cosmic ballet goes on.
The cosmic ballet goes on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's from the monorail episode, and I had that one queued up and ready to go on Monday morning. So yes, Leonard Nimoy, a big fan of these adult animation things.
He's great in all these.
Mm-hmm. He's excellent. He has a great voice. He's very funny. Seemed to be a good guy.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he like denies it and he keeps looking kind of furtively at the security cameras. And then Fry's like, come on, there were 79 episodes, about 30 good ones.
Yeah. He says, perhaps you're remembering my one man show about Vincent Van Spock.
Van Gogh. It's like, oh, don't cry. Sure, I outwitted you. But then it turns out that the rest of the cast they decided to leave Earth because Earth didn't need them anymore. And so 300 years ago, they all took off and left Earth behind.
Yes. This like flashback has some classic Star Trek lines here of you are and always shall be my friend. Kirk says that to Spock, I think.
Spock says that to Kirk. And he says, Spock... Bill, you are and always will be my friend, but I just signed a 6-month lease on my apartment and I can't walk away from a commitment like that.
Yes, you are and always shall be my friend. It's from Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan. Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Spock dies and is saying this to Kirk. And then Star Trek Into Darkness is the second J.J. Abrams movie, which is like a redo. Have you seen this one?
Yeah, I think I saw it in theaters, actually.
Yeah, it's definitely worse than the first one. It's basically a redo of Khan. And they flip the positions. They have Chris Pine's Kirk die in the same way
right
as Spock died in the original.
Wasn't there like a parallel universe situation?
Yeah, and I think they revive him with Tribbles like 10 minutes later, which is dumb. But yes, they're like in a parallel universe. That's why Chris Pine is there. But I think the best moment of that movie, and like the only redeeming moment of that movie, is Kirk says, "I did what you would have done," which is like a super meta line, because he is doing literally what Spock did in the alternate universe. But yeah. But he's saying it to Spock as in like, "Oh, Spock, you're a good guy. I did what you would have done. Like anyone would have done this in my position." But
he literally did it in a different movie.
Yeah, great. That's like that. It's Into Darkness is a Lindelof movie, and that's like it's pretty mediocre, but there's like some little bits of Lindelof brilliance.
Yeah, I remember like the theater going, that's when it was like, look, Leonard Nimoy's here. Mm-hmm. All right, so they all fly off and Fry gets upset, and then he just like grabs Leonard Nimoy's head and is like, it's fine, like I'm angry with rage. And so he's gonna go take Spock so they can get the taste back.
Yes, and then a guy from Next Generation, number one, slides in the like head display. He like slides forward and he's like, oh, I'm in the front row now.
That's funny, because I meant to ask if you knew who Jonathan Frakes or something was, and I meant to look it up, but I didn't. So yeah, he's like, hey, like front row. Yes, very good. I like the idea that they're like stacking people.
Yeah, exactly. That. Yeah, those what's the word? Shelves, I guess. The shelves are very deep, and there's many heads behind the initial heads. Yes, so this guy plays Riker in Next Generation, who's like the second in command, essentially. And he is very famous for the growing the beard trope, which is the reverse jump the shark of the show was kind of bad. And then the second season, he shows up and has a beard, and then the show gets much better.
That's funny. I didn't know about that. Yeah. I've definitely heard the name Riker before.
Yeah, the other Riker thing that I encourage our listeners to check out in their extracurricular time is the YouTube clip of Riker sitting down in a chair. Weird. It's like an 8-minute like supercut of him sitting like 100 times, and he sits very weird. Good.
All right, well, you have your marching orders. Sitting orders. Yeah, and so Fry is like, okay, I'm doing this, and Leela tries to stop him, but then Fry is like, no, we need this so that we can have hope for the future, and she says, but it's set to 800 years in the past.
Yeah. The whole episode, none of it really, there's like almost no plot, I feel
no.
like, where I suppose once we get to the planet, there's a little bit of plot, but a lot of it is like nothing really matters. And yep. It's just Star Trek references.
Yeah, this is just all like, look, we managed to get this whole cast together for this.
Right.
Yeah. And surprise says Star Trek helped him when he felt like he didn't have any friends. He felt like maybe he had them. And Leela's like, all right, that's touchingly pathetic. Let's go. And Bender's like, I'll go too. With Leonard's permission, of course. And then there's this cute little nod from Leonard Nimoy where he's just like, mm-hmm.
Bender respects Leonard.
He does, yeah. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So then Leela loses control of the ship as soon as they get into this, like, forbidden space. And it like pulls them down onto the planet, and they see all the sets from the show, and Leonard Nimoy is just like overcome with sadness because he wishes that his fellow cast members were there too.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, I mean, surely all of these sets are actual sets from the show. I mean, I'm curious about, there's like an Old West set, which is like the first one that they show. That must be an iconic episode or set of Star Trek in the Old West. But yeah, I'm sure there's tons of little references here.
Definitely. Like they, even in the wiki description, it's like they step out of the Guardian of Forever set. And I was like, I don't know. But yeah, so then this is where we meet like all the cast members. I love that Leonard Nimoy calls William Shatner Bill all the time. I like to imagine that's real. It probably is, right?
Yeah.
Bill Shatner.
Yeah, Bill. That makes sense. If you could have Futurama do an episode like this about any TV show of like your particular TV show where you're like, oh my god, they're on the Swan Station set, you know, or whatever.
Oh my god.
What show would you pick?
What a difficult question. Because I feel like my favorite shows are all just comedies. So it's like, why would you bother like having a Futurama cast?
They're
like,
in the office.
They're in the office. They're in the Parks Department.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. What's your answer?
I mean, probably Lost. It's like, it would be the exact same episode where it's like a nerdy sci-fi thing. And there's a bunch of
time travel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so when he says like, oh, I wish the other cast members were here, William Shatner is like, that's my cue. And then they meet everybody, including Welshie, who replaced Scotty because he had trouble yodeling.
Yeah, Welshie definitely is going to be the loser of this episode.
Yes,
gets
big
killed
time.
And then like continues to be shocked.
Yes, his carcass continues to be like desecrated.
Yeah.
Yes. And so they were on their way to Welshie's cousin's house one time when their ship was pulled down onto this planet. And when they woke up, they all had their bodies back. And yeah.
Yeah, this is when we meet Melvar, right?
Yes. So they're like, we love this planet. We get everything we want. We never age. Check out these abs. And they're like, oh, we never thought about who was doing this for us because we're celebrities and this is the kind of treatment we expect.
Right.
But yeah, that's when we meet Melvar, and he's this big like energy cloud, and he's just been like waiting for Leonard Nimoy to show up so that he could complete his collection.
Yeah, someone calls him a glowing cloud effect, and he gets mad and says, "I'm not an effect. You doubt my power," and then zaps and kills Welshie.
Yeah, Welshie. Yeah, he kills Welshie, and then he's like, "Behold, another power different from the one you saw before." And then he gives Leonard Nimoy a body, and he's like, "Wow, a buff tan body. This is mine, all right." Yes, and so when they fired off the tapes all those years ago, they landed on his planet, and you just like watch them over and over again. Mm-hmm. And he especially likes the episode with the energy beings.
Yeah, I mean, not dissimilar from my upbringing of here are some tapes, watch them over and over again and become way too attached and, you know, enamored with the cast of Survivor Palau. Like, you know, no human should like that season as much as I do.
I also really love it. Yeah. Were you also a big like recorder of shows then?
A little bit. I was a recorder of Friends towards the end of its run. TiVo was a big thing when that came. And when we got that,
We didn't have that for a long time, but definitely like on the weekends, there would usually be like 4 Simpson episodes in a row for some reason.
And you'd record so those.
Like, yeah.
My God, that's so great.
Yeah, so good. Yeah. And I'd be like, yes, I can finally watch Lisa's Rival whenever I want. Yes. Anyway, so Melvar refers to himself as the seer of the tapes, knower of the episodes. And he's like, yeah, I have this encyclopedic knowledge of Star Trek. And Fry's like, I bet I know more than you. And then that makes Melvar shoot Welshie's body again.
Yes, I like the line, long have I waited for the one to play Spock. At last we can begin Star Trek or Starfest 3002.
Yes, and they're like, how long is the Star Trek convention going to go on? And he's like, oh, just until time stops. And and they're like, well, can people who hate Star Trek leave? Like, no, you have to stay even longer.
Signature line or an autograph line that Melvar is excitedly standing in, and it's revealed that Melvar has 3 L's, to which I had to go back and edit all my notes to have 3 L's in Melvar.
George Takei goes, I think I've done enough conventions to know how to spell Melvar.
Yeah. I think I went to Comic-Con twice, and I remember seeing Brett Spiner, I think that's his name. He plays Data in TNG, and I think he's canceled now, unfortunately. I think he is the only like OG Star Trek person I ever saw at these conventions.
Yeah.
Which is a bit surprising because they're all
about it. Is. It seems like it's all about them. But I was just going to say, my note app doesn't appear to think that Melvar is incorrectly spelled, even though I put the 3 L's.
Look
but
at that.
As I scroll down, I see it as like going back and underlining.
Yeah. As a child, this is a deranged story or a deranged activity to be doing. I would retype Harry Potter. I would Harry Potter in front of me and just like type it out in a word processing document. And
I used to do the same thing, except that I would write it out by hand. So
is this common, or are we just, you know, a little bit different?
I think maybe the latter, because I would just like take books and just like write them out longhand on like yellow legal pads.
Mm-hmm. I never did that. That does sound fun though. But I would type them out, and there were a couple of issues with this. One was when, yes, a word was not in the dictionary, and I would have to right click and add Voldemort to the dictionary. Mm-hmm. So all the Voldemort misspellings were now correct. And then different fonts were a big issue of, oh, here's Harry gets a letter from Molly Weasley, and in the book it's signed with like a different font. It's signed with someone's font. And it's like, okay, what do I do? How do I type
how
this?
How do I make this happen? Yeah. Honestly, I attribute that to me like knowing where the commas go in dialogue and stuff. Like, you know, that like if someone says something, it's like comma, quotation mark, said sure. Harry.
Sure. Interesting. Yeah. So,
probably good training.
That is, yeah. I mean, I think I would probably miss that if I were to write a novel. I think I would not adhere to proper comma etiquette. comma syntax, I guess, not etiquette.
Fair. It's funny because like in hindsight, I don't think I knew what this Slim Shady thing was from that William Shatner does in the next scene. Which like in hindsight, I'm like, why? Of course it's from this.
Right.
But I think I forgot this episode existed. But anyway, he's doing a spoken word version of real Slim Shady or whatever. He's like, please stand up. Please stand up.
Very good.
And that's really stuck with me over the years.
I do wonder when Shatner kind of started to become a joke. And this might have been before Shatner became like a true parody of himself and kind of looked down upon. Like, I don't think a ton of people really respect or look up to Shatner anymore. And this might be like right on the border of him. Like, I think he's self-aware in this episode, which is good. And then I think he, sometime between now and then, he's become unself-aware.
Yeah, I was actually a little bit surprised how like in on the joke he seems to be here.
Right.
But yeah, I think there's like stuff later where it's like he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And what's that show? Stars on Mars or whatever. Like
sure.
The host of that.
I did not watch any of that. I know that
no,
they
neither.
Sent him to space.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I think he has a couple of like very self-congratulatory biographies of how great he is.
Didn't he only get to go to like the edge of space? He didn't go to like real space.
Yeah. It's like that car, like remember when someone did like the longest parachute ever, or like I think it was like that kind of deal of like we're just really, really high up.
Just like the edge of space. Yeah. Side note, your beloved ex-boss Adam calling me a science denier last week.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Adam is so particular about the language that we use, where you said the alleged genes.
I said it's
of...
allegedly a gene for cilantro. I meant like allegedly it's right on just one gene. Like,
yeah.
Noted science denier, Lindsay Wilson. How dare you, Adam?
Yeah.
How dare you?
We love it.
Honestly, it's always taken me to task week after week.
But he was appreciative of the metadata. Yeah.
I'll never let it happen again, Adam. All right. So the next part of the convention is this trivia contest, and Fry wins, and Melvar gets mad, and he's like, this is over, like, my buzzer is broken. And then he's like, it's time to do the fan script that was written by the biggest fan ever. And Fry's like, you have my fan script? Because, like, the scoreboard says that I'm a bigger fan than you.
Yeah. This is also, like, very accurate to fan trivia contests, where it's like, I'm really a really big fan of stuff, but I just get like trounced by the actual biggest fan in any, like, I'm certainly not the biggest fan of anything in the world. Like, there's a bigger nerd about everything.
Again, not to keep referencing Harry Potter, but I one time, back before all the bad stuff, I went to Harry Potter trivia and I was like, I'm gonna destroy this.
Yeah.
It was like my first time discovering that like people are intense.
I think I've told the story about going to Simpsons trivia and it being the same thing. I think me, you, and Jeremy would maybe hold our own, but
our
I also
powers would combine to do fine, but I don't think we'd win.
I also don't think we win, and I think I did Simpsons trivia in 2014, and so I think my Simpsons knowledge is probably worse 10 years later. Like,
even though you had a podcast.
Only down from here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yes. So Melvar doesn't want to ruin the ending of his fan script. And so Fry, Leela, and Bender go wait in the ship. And funny from Fry, where he's like, I'm not going till I get my 600 quatludes. And Leela grabs him and they run away from the planet because he's no longer looking.
Yeah. I liked there was a lot of pedantics in the Futurama wiki about, or a lot of potential explanation for the joke about George and Walter sharing a script where, oh, we don't have enough. George and Walter will have to share. And there was a lot of like, this could either be a joke because they share the console on the show, or in one season, George could only do half the episodes. And so they had Walter do the other half of the episodes and they had to
Probably
share
bad.
A dress and they had to like share a dressing room. There was like a lot of potential theories about the details of this joke.
That's funny. I didn't know any of that, but loved that. I think that's very funny. I took it to be like, oh, they're less like respected or something.
Yeah.
But that's way funnier. So I wondered a little bit like how they managed to escape so easily when it's like, apparently, like I would have thought there was something like pulling the ship down. But that seems not to be a problem anymore.
I thought, and maybe I imagined this, and it happens later in the episode, but I thought the ship like crashes into the planet and is destroyed when they first land on the planet.
Yeah, I guess it gets destroyed more fully later.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, they're like, oh, we can't just leave them there. We have to go back and get them. And they're like, well, what are we going to do? And this is where Fry says this thing of like, on the show, someone would come up with a complicated plan and then explain it with a simple analogy.
Yeah, like putting too much air in a balloon.
Yes, we're going to reroute the engine power through the primary weapons and reconfigure to Melvar's frequency, thereby overloading his quantum structure, like putting too much air in a balloon.
Yeah, very good. Maybe my favorite joke of the episode, just in just that it's like so accurate to what they always do in Star Trek.
Perfectly constructed. Yes, and so they try this, but then... Oh, also, like, I do want to touch on the actual lines from the script, which I alluded to at the beginning of, like, fascinating captain and logical too. And from Kirk, where he goes, my ship, who I love like a woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think it's kind of a missed opportunity? Like, Zap is in this episode, but there's not a ton of, like, Zap-Kirk Mm-hmm, Shatner true. Interactions. I kind of feel like that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but it's a good point. And I was thinking, like, I guess I stopped saying it. We got sidetracked talking about the, like, Shatner being in on the joke, but, like, they have the Amazon Woman in the Mood episode where Zap is doing the, like, Lola impression, doing the
Sure.
Shatner thing.
Yes, of
So,
course.
yeah. Yes. And so Leonard Nimoy is going to say to Melvar, like, you have to respect your actors. Back when I directed Star Trek IV, I got a magnificent performance out of Bill because I respected him so much. And again, that's an even numbered movie.
Yeah, and then Shatner says, when I directed Star Trek number five, I got a good performance out of myself because I respected myself. And
Yes, exactly.
I mean, again, maybe this is like why Shatner takes a turn where people are just dunking on the ones that he directed. Nobody likes Star Trek five and everyone loves Star Trek four. And maybe
Yeah.
that caused some psychic damage.
Maybe. I think he's fine. But yeah, they try their plan where they're like shooting at Melvar and basically just like draws strength from the energy. And Franco's like a balloon and something bad happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, they get pulled back to the planet. And this is when Melvar is having a bit of like a crisis of faith where he's like, you guys are real space heroes. Like you're risking your lives to save these people who are just pretending to be. What do I
Yeah.
do?
And this is kind of what I was saying. He says he's going to pit them against each other in armed combat. And this is where I was like, oh, I know where this is going. I know the exact scenes that are going to happen.
Yes. And so he lists all the episodes that have fights to the death in them, and Fry's like, ah, you forgot episode 66. And then he blasts Welshie again.
Yeah, kind of nice that Fry is such a big Star Trek fan. I find that endearing.
Yes, I agree. I don't know why I thought it was so funny. Shatner and his group are like planning their attack strategy, and he goes like, "Wasn't there an episode where I threw my shoe at the enemy?" And then he throws his shoe, it hits George Takei, and then he's just like hopping on one foot, and he's like, "My foot is cold." And I laughed so hard.
I like that as well. That was good.
Yeah, that got like a real
A
burst of
genuine
laughter out of
laugh,
me.
not just an
Yeah,
exhale, a
yeah, I
quiet
think it.
exhale.
Yeah, it's an often a smiling show, but that was a real laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Uhura is gonna like distract them with her fan dance. George Takei is like, "You assume that I know karate, and you shouldn't just assume that." William Shatner's like, "Well, you never talk about yourself."
Yeah. I like that Bender finds a machine gun and just wildly shoots it for like 10 seconds and runs out of ammo.
Yeah, like, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
And so Leela and Shatner start fighting for a little bit, and then they decide to make out instead.
Yeah, so there's
And
no right way to hit a woman than do it the wrong way.
Leonard Nimoy tries the Vulcan death grip on, doesn't do
Yes.
anything. He tries it on
Yeah.
Bender, I think, which is like
Yeah,
the
he
worst
does.
person to try it on.
I mean, I think that's why it doesn't work, because there's no like
True.
nerves.
Had it been Fry, it would have worked
Yeah.
perfectly. But yes, and so Melvar's mother shows up and is like, "It's time for dinner," and they're like, "Oh my gosh, he was just a kid." And they're like, "No, he's 34."
I felt very targeted in this line reading of somebody who is 33 doing a podcast about
As
various
somebody who is
shows.
34 doing a
Yeah.
podcast about the show, really, really hit hard. Did not like it. So yeah, so they're all gonna try to escape while he's eating dinner, but their ships are both super damaged, and the Planet Express ship, their engine is out, and then the cast, their ship's life support is out. And this is actually something I quoted. I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, but I quoted this in a high school debate wherein Jeremy and I were both at the same like debate competition thing.
Okay.
And it was about like, should we add a new like heart center or something to this hospital? It was like, well, and I was arguing the point of like, why wouldn't you put it at the place that already has a heart center? Like, seems like you should probably combine the resources to make it like one extra
Sure.
state-of-the-art place or whatever. And I use that line to be like, well, we in this city have this particular item, and we in this city have this particular item. And I was like, stop it, you're going in circles.
Yeah. How did the debate judge react to you quoting Futurama in your serious debate?
I remember only Jeremy laughing and no one else thinking it was at all relevant, and we did not win. Yes,
Well, at least Jeremy is a all-time great talent.
I feel like I was only trying to impress Jeremy.
Yeah.
Like, Jeremy don't think this is good. But did not impress the judge. Although I did feel like we won in spite of my poor performance. But anyway, it's fine.
I think I've talked about how I was on the debate team in high school, and I feel like was just not coached at all. Like, we showed up, and I think the coach was like told some of the more experienced people on the debate team to like tell us how it works, and that just like never happened. And so we just kind of showed up to debates with like, was this like speech and debate where you have like giant binders of like articles and stuff, and you like reference it, and it's like a big formal process, or was this just like in a class? Okay,
they were just like, you have like 15 minutes, you can prepare for stuff, and we were like, okay.
I see. Yeah, it's like formalized speech and debate with like formalized competition was, I mean, it really was like a sport, and just like nobody told us that, and so we would just like show up and have like no idea what was going on and
no preparation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this case, they combine their powers, the functional parts of one ship with the other. And unfortunately, the ship is now too heavy to take off. And so the actors ditch their bodies.
Yeah.
And I think Nimoy is like, I'm living in a gefilte fish jar now.
Yes. Somewhat grotesque, where they show just like all the decapitated bodies like fall out of the ship, and then everyone's in their little jars.
Yeah, I don't know how they had the jars for all the other ones, but they somehow do. And now, fortunately, they're able to bring all the tapes with them. Leonard Nimoy's like, this is not worth it to me. Yeah.
I do like that here we like cut back to the hearing where they've been describing this story. And then they're like, so what happened next? And it's revealed that they're still actively fighting Melvar, and like suddenly we're just like in the present.
Yeah, it's like, because they saw the Nimbus and they were like, excellent, we're saved. And they're like, you started this stupid court martial. Now, if you don't mind, like, we have to go stop fighting Melvar. And so Melvar says, basically, like, if I can't have them, no one can. And Fry's like, okay, but like, you love them. Why would you want them to die? And he says, I don't know what I would do without them. And then Fry's like, come on, a TV show can't be your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I have more of a life than TV shows at this point, which is good.
Certainly.
But when
this
I was
podcast.
15,
yeah. I thought this was very cute that Fry goes, look at Walter Koenig. After Star Trek, he became a real actor.
Yeah.
And then the delivery from Walter Koenig, he goes, not just an actor, a well-rounded person. And credit cards and friends and keys.
Again, like kind of amazing that they got him to say this, that they're like really, really quite mean to this poor guy.
It was so funny. Friends and keys. It was so cute. I just loved it so much. Oh, God. Anyway, so Melvar's like, yeah, okay, fine. I'll move out of my parents' basement, maybe get a temp job. And Fry's like, whoa, like, let's not go nuts here. And he also, Melvar bests Fry in one final trivia question before going back to his own planet.
Good for Melvar. Maybe he'll be okay.
Yes, and the cast is all reflecting, and they're like, wait, like, was it actually that bad being there? Like,
yeah.
He gave us eternal youth and lots of perks, and we had bodies and whatever. And Bri's like, yeah, we only had to put up with one really annoying Star Trek fan. And they're like, oh, no, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So that's the end of season 4, Alex.
Wow, I didn't even realize that was the last episode. I guess that's a
fitting. Normally I say that at the top, but I forgot.
You saying that makes me think of maybe one of my less frequently watched Simpsons episode of Krusty Gets Canceled with all the guest stars. Seems that's kind of like a similar season finale.
Yes, agreed. So yes, good concept episode. They saved it for the end, even though it wasn't recorded at the end of the season. But yeah, so with that, who is the final winner of the season?
Oh, winner of the season. Well, so
of
loser
episode,
is,
I guess.
Yeah, loser of the episode is definitely Scotty, the Welshie. New Scotty. Welshie, yes. Welshie who gets killed and then...
Decisive, yeah.
Yes. But interestingly, the wiki said that this is only one of two episodes with no professor in it. So I guess that's kind
so
of...
So maybe a loss for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say who's the winner? Maybe the... cast, because now they get to go back and continue to live, but now they will die.
Yeah,
at some
they're
point.
Just heads in a jar. I don't know if that's a great life.
Yeah,
Leela makes out with Kirk. That's with Shatner. That's nice.
Yeah.
Like,
I probably
do kind
Fry.
Of...
He got what he wanted. He got the tapes back.
Yeah, and he got to interact with all of his heroes.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Just like me,
600
me if I got to interact with the Survivor Palau cast.
Yes, exactly like that.
Yeah.
Next week's episode, Alex, is called "Crimes of the Hot."
Crimes of the Hot. H-O-T.
H-O-T.
Okay. Is there... I'm guessing this is a pun of Crimes of the Heart. So...
probably.
Bender falls in love with a being from the sun. A sun being... a very warm, hot sun being. And it's like a forbidden love.
All right. Good. Yeah. The title is a reference to the 1986 film Crimes of the Heart. There you go.
Can we, now that I've made my guess, what is Crimes of the Heart about?
Well, I'll tell you. I'm glad you asked.
Yes.
It is a 1986 black comedy drama film, and it follows a bunch of sisters who reunite in their family home after one of the sisters is arrested for shooting her husband. Each is forced to face the consequences of the crimes of the heart that she has committed.
Okay. So that sounds fun. I thought Crimes of the Heart was going to be like, I don't really know what Terms of Endearment is. I think that's a very sad movie.
I think
I kind of...
This includes Diane Keaton, Jessica Lange, Sissy Spacek, Sam Shepard, et cetera.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like a fun time.
It's a tight 105 minutes.
Oof. I guess that's that's a little for a movie from when did you say, the 70s, 80s?
1986.
I don't know if I'm
not
sitting
that
through.
Old.
I don't know if I'm sitting through an hour and 50 minutes of a movie from 1980.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, great. So yeah, so what else? How can people keep in touch with us?
Potoftomorrow@gmail.com, at Pot of Tomorrow. Come meet me in Quebec City. We'll be hosting a panel there. I'll give out autographs like the cast of Star Trek. Lindsay is like just down the road. You can drive 5 hours to see Lindsay.
Perfect.
Yeah. What have you got going on? No new BoJack.
Nothing new. TK. All done over there. So yeah. This is it. Tell your friends.
All right.
Good. All right. See you next time for Crimes of the Heart.
Bye.